RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, two recent announcements on RMA reform and the idea of a cross-party accord on oil and gas exploration. You might remember that Simon Court, who is an ACT List MP and their energy and resources spokesperson, has spoken to us about that before on this program. Well, Simon's back with us. Morning, Simon. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Paul, and good morning to Reality Check listeners.
Now, it seems that this idea of a cross-party accord, much the same as superannuation, all those other things on oil and gas, Shane Jones, I asked him about it yesterday. He was kind of on board, was the impression I got. How are you finding, as this is sort of coming together as an idea for you, putting it out there, how's it coming together, do you think?
Well, Shane and I are 100% aligned that New Zealand needs a cross-party accord on the role of gas in our economy as an energy source, but also as a raw material in manufacturing. The coalition government is committed to restoring natural gas in the energy mix. We've just announced that or introduced a new bill to the House to repeal Labor's crazy ban on oil and gas exploration and to restore this concept of promoting the use of crown minerals. That's going to require more mining, but we have fantastic resources here. We should be able to get them out of the ground and use them. Now, I wrote to Labor, the Greens, Te Pāti Māori. I also wrote to the unions that support Labor, and I asked them, would they sign up to a cross-party accord? Because it's all very well changing the law to allow for oil and gas exploration, but businesses that want to invest in New Zealand want to know that if there's a change of government 10 years from now, I doubt it will be sooner, that their investment won't be wrecked by a future government that's still wedded to Greta Thunberg climate cult concepts, which, you know, have frankly been shown don't work. So I haven't had a response from any of the political parties, but I have had some very positive discussions with Labor union representatives about why they think it's important there's a role for gas. The disappointing thing is they haven't been able to influence Labor Party to change their mind yet.
Are they always going to be the hard ones to move on this, do you think, for now anyway?
Well, they shouldn't be. I mean, Labor used to be the party of the workers. It used to be the party of people who were struggling at the bottom and wanted a better life. Now it seems that they've wedded themselves to this concept of, you know, climate change before everything else. Essentially, it's an anti-progress, anti-human approach that's shared by parties on the left and kind of echoes the stunts that Greenpeace and some of their brethren have been pulling lately. They're not prepared to entertain a concept that we need minerals, resources, oil and gas to sustain human life, to make us wealthier. And by the way, all of those resources support high-paid, high-skilled jobs in the provinces and in regions where people choose to live. And, you know, all I'm asking is, hey, Labor, you used to understand what your supporters needed. Why don't you even just go and look across the ditch at Australia, look at what the Australian Labor Party, the Australian Labor Unions are doing to get behind oil and gas, roading, transport, mining. They would never, ever talk that stuff down because they know it's absolutely fundamental to people having better lives, particularly those people who would regard themselves as working class.
Well, good luck with that one. To RMA reform, Cabinet has agreed, I think there are 10 core design features for the new resource management system. Don't expect you to go through the whole list, but what are the standouts? What are the most meaningful, as far as you're concerned?
Well, many Kiwis would have heard about people trying to get, say, housing subdivisions over the line, and having real struggles with their local council who want to argue about every aspect of a development. Now, who knew? We've done many, many housing subdivisions over the last 50 plus years in New Zealand. And for those done since 1991, you know, which is a fair amount of time, over 25 years, we have resource consents that say, look, if you're going to be doing earthworks, you're going to be putting in drainage, you're going to be clearing vegetation, here are some consent conditions that should apply. So you don't end up having a whole lot of sediment washing off the site into the local stream, and you don't want dust going all over the neighbour's property when you're doing the earthworks. And what we're proposing, and it's something that's done in other comparable OECD countries, is to say instead of having to get consents for this stuff, why don't we just have a national standard for activities that are common, like putting in a culvert, like doing earthworks in subdivision? The aim of that is to have fewer and faster consents and just move to a system where, hey, if I comply with the national standard, I shouldn't have to waste any time going to council. I'll just tell them what I'm doing. I'll send them a copy of the plans to have on file and I'll get on with it. We think that we could reduce the 40 or 50,000 consents a year that New Zealanders are required to get everything from a 1 meter high retaining wall, you know, to building a house. I mean, who knew building a house should be a human right? And we want to give people their property rights back and their human rights back by saying you shouldn't have to ask for consent for those things. So that's the first major change, fewer and faster consents. And another one is we want to stop every Tom, Dick and Harry turning up and objecting to infrastructure projects. It makes no sense at all when we all agree there's an infrastructure deficit. We need safer roads, more efficient four-lane roads between our major cities. We need to replace and upgrade our aging wastewater treatment plants, for example. And you know, there are ports that need an extra wharf because guess what? We've got a growing population and we're an export-led economy. We export billions and billions of dollars worth of, you know, dairy products and forestry products and other manufactured products, wine, for example, every year. We need ports that are working. Well, we can't have people who aren't actually affected, they're not neighbours, turn up and object to things. So we want to really limit who has scope and make sure that if these infrastructure assets are already shown on a spatial plan or your council's plan, that they shouldn't have to ask for permission and go through years of consenting in order to prove why they should be allowed to give you the asset that's actually going to make your life better. And so, you know, we're going to have some new rules under one of the acts we're replacing the RMA with, which will be infrastructure and housing focused, just to make this stuff more enabling, recognising that humans should be at the centre of everything.
Two things come to mind what you just said. First up, how many consents did you say? You ballpark 50,000, I think it was the figure you used there. That's an industry, Simon. That's an industry.
Well, it's a huge industry. 40 to 50,000 consents a year. I mean, we peaked in, I think, 2021 during the height of the most recent building boom. But I'm serious when I say that if your retaining wall on your residential property is going to be more than a metre, you're going to need to get a consent. There's no environmental effect from you building a retaining wall, either on your neighbour or the environment. So you know, we don't need consents for things like that.
How much does that cost, though? Because I'm adding it all up and I'm thinking that there will be a few people squealing and not being able to, especially maybe local authorities that need money, that income stream might dissolve away over time.
Well, we think it would be better for consumers, better for property owners, if they weren't forced to pay a resource management tax, because that's pretty much what it's become. Councils have become incredibly risk averse. The reason they ask for so many consents is not because they think they're saving the environment. They're literally trying to protect themselves from some kind of legal challenge if anything goes wrong. And, you know, they will object to things like wastewater pump stations that another part of council is building, simply because, you know, they are afraid if they don't object or if they don't try to put some crazy consent conditions on it, then they could end up in court being subject to judicial review by these NGOs, by these environmental pressure groups, these activists who say, oh, well, you know, I'm not happy that that council's building the wastewater pump station there and it should be somewhere else. Well, for goodness sakes, if you're the asset owner, you know that water runs downhill, your pump station needs to be at the bottom of the hill. There's nothing really to argue about, but that's the kind of crazy argument that I've heard objectors making. But just coming back to this business model for resource management, I presented along with Minister Chris Bishop to the Resource Management Law Association on Friday when we announced these changes. There's about 25,000 planning professionals in New Zealand. Maybe the split at the conference was maybe 50% planners, 30% lawyers, maybe 20% of people from industry and council managers. The overwhelming response was, Court Bishop, if you could pull this off, we would be eternally grateful, because we'd much rather be spending time and charging our clients for actually delivering plans and delivering developments that are what the clients ask for, then arguing the point about, you know, the size of the culvert and whether we should be planting 10 bull rushes or 20 bull rushes in place of the 10 that we took away. They don't want to spend time doing that. They'd far rather be delivering really good projects, whether they're subdivisions or infrastructure projects for their clients. So I was surprised, but heartened by the reaction we get. And, you know, this is not just about changing the resource management system. It's about restoring New Zealanders' property rights so that you can build things that aren't having an effect on the environment and aren't having an effect on your neighbour as of right. And yep. we think that's going to help restore New Zealand as a property-owning democracy and give Kiwis their pride back and unlock some economic development and productivity along the way.
Shane Jones had a few words to say about the Greenpeace protesters who turned up at Strattera's offices, I think, on Monday. And they weren't very kind words. I've got a quote from you. Thugs harassing productive Kiwis who just want to build a wealthier country. But do they have any legitimate points here? And you may have answered the second point I mentioned before, and that is vexatious objections, let's say, to just for the sake of it, get in the way of infrastructure development or stuff like that. But do these Greenpeace protesters and others with doubts have any legitimate point about fast-tracking a process and curtailing, you know, members of the community's objections to development? Does it do any of that?
Well, they have every right to protest and to make their views known. What they don't have is a right to stop people coming and going from their building. Their behaviour this week is pretty disgusting. Not only did they lock access to the building and blockade it, some of the activists got into the building and locked themselves to stair rails and so on and absolutely terrified the staff who were in that building. Now, these are people who go to work every day in administration and other support roles. They're not political people. They just happen to work in the building where Strattera is located. Greenpeace don't really care about people. Now, they might think they have a legitimate case, but guess what? We know that natural gas is the natural transition away from coal to cleaner energy. It's got about half the emissions of coal. If they're opposing natural gas, then they're not serious environmentalists. If they're opposing mining and yet they're live streaming their thuggish behaviour from a mobile phone that depends on mining, they are not serious people. They are cultists, they are activists, they're anti-progress and anti-human. Greenpeace's time has come and gone. We are mature in the way we manage our environmental effects, but what Kiwis really want is a healthy economy. They want the opportunity to work in high-paid jobs. They don't all want to go to university and have to spend years studying in order to have a good job. That's what the mining sector, and that's what oil and gas offers, and we know it because so many Kiwis are going to Australia to take advantage of that. We want them to have those opportunities here. That's what the coalition stands for, and that's what ACT campaigned for.
We've been in a per capita recession for 2 years. I think we've gone backwards. I saw 4.3%, but I could be wrong. Anyway, GDP is 0.2%, but per capita is where the rubber hits the road for people. How much of a handbrake were the RMA laws on our economy and contributing ultimately or creating a more difficult situation in getting out of a recession? Were they a handbrake?
Look, they're absolutely sawdust in the transmission of the New Zealand economy. It's hard to quantify, but Infrastructure Commission gives us some idea. They estimate that New Zealand infrastructure projects spent $1.3 billion a year recently just on getting the consents. That's stacking up all the technical reports. That's years in negotiation with the Environment Court. That's trying to pay off vexatious litigants or, you know, paying off cultural taxes in order to get their permits. $1.3 billion a year. I mean, New Zealand's about $180, $200 billion behind in infrastructure. The last thing we need is a $1.3 billion a year resource management tax on top of that. If we can unlock the system with our planned reforms, two acts, one focus on enabling infrastructure and housing that says you can do it as a right because it's good for humans, and a separate act which will set environmental limits. Because if we're working in the natural environment, we want to know what the water quality is that we're meant to maintain while we're working there. But you know what? That shouldn't stop us from replacing culverts under the state highway or building bridges where we need to cross rivers. So yeah, we want to unlock the system, and we'd like to think that if we can achieve our goals, then we'll this will help restore New Zealand's productivity and restore our our wealth per capita, you know, because you know, if we've got better infrastructure, we can have better jobs, you know, we can get stuff around the country more quickly and easily, and you know, businesses will want to invest here, and you know, hopefully international investors come back as well.
You mentioned bridges. Just a funny aside, the other day we were talking about this and an engineering guy texted in and he mentioned the New Zealand Bridge Manual. I didn't know we had one, but apparently we do. You refer to the New Zealand Bridge Manual. As an engineer, you might be aware of that if you need to know anything about bridges.
Well, I am familiar with the Bridge Manual, Paul. I think one of the challenges we've got that if we had a, if people just followed the, if the manual was followed, and we took a cookie cutter approach to a lot of the infrastructure that we design and build, it would be a lot cheaper and easier to deliver. The problem is the Resource Management Act says, oh no, you can't do that. Yeah, we don't want people driving around the corner and not being able to see the view. And so you've got to put the bridge in a slightly different place. Or crikey, you know, this this is a very special river. It's got spiritual values. You know, we can't put the bridge there. So all the stuff just becomes far more expensive because we end up designing it to bespoke consent conditions. That's not what they do elsewhere in the world. And we know we don't have to do it like that because after Cyclone Gabrielle on State Highway 25 in Coromandel, 25A, NZTA turns out that, one of their contractors had some moulds for bridge beams and some pile casings in the yard. And they said, well, if that worked for the last bridge, bring it up here. Let's whack it in. Guess what? 9 months later, the bridge was open. That's okay. The cookie cutter approach that better resource management laws will enable.
Yeah, don't block the view. That annoys me, going over a bridge, not being able to see over. Okay, last question. Liquefied natural gas importing terminal. Is there any more thinking about that? I mean, I know it's a big project, takes a while to put in place, but that would be a good redundancy item in the energy mix for the future, wouldn't it? We could plug that in if we really needed it.
Yeah, look, there certainly is an opportunity for liquefied natural gas in New Zealand. The Act position is that we should be looking for indigenous gas first. It's much cheaper. We're not exposed to international supply chain and international prices. And you know, if we've got the resource here, then we should develop it. That's going to deliver better jobs, you know, better lives for Kiwis who are involved in the sector. And it's going to mean that, you know, if you're a manufacturing business and you want a long-term gas supply contract, you're much better off knowing your gas is coming locally down the pipe than, you know, across a shipping lane from far away. It could be as simple as setting up a floating pontoon with, you know, a gas ship anchored offshore, tied into our existing gas pipeline. You could do that in 12 to 24 months if we needed to. So the option will always be there. What the market is telling government is that that's going to cost quite a bit more on a per kilojoule or unit of energy basis. Once you've done it, you're pretty much going to see a step up in the price of gas. So I guess that then leads us to the conclusion we should be enabling our own gas first. That's why the government, you know, and following the ACT National Coalition Agreement, introduced a bill yesterday which will repeal Labor's gas ban and will make the use of Crown Minerals much easier. So we're going to look at home first before we start looking at LNG.
Simon Court, ACT MP, Energy and Resources Spokesperson, thanks for coming back on. Have a great weekend. You can always read the Bridge Manual in the weekend, you know, catch up on the latest.
Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it. And I hope your Reality Check Radio listeners get something out of this.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.